I'll make one little adjustment. I'm actually from the University of Louisville, not the University of Kentucky.
Oh, sorry.
But we are in Kentucky, so I'm going to talk about Kentucky a lot.
When you get to the end, you can just stop and I'll bring it up.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to talk about tailoring interventions for increased fruit and vegetable consumption among urban and rural. Oh, it's changing itself. Hold on. urban and rural African American audiences using a market decision analysis technique.
I just want to do.
Yeah. Okay. It flipped itself two slides.
Oh, is it about the right one now?
Yeah, it's okay. This was a study that was funded by NHLBI, and we primarily were kind of looking at identifying message design options at this part of the study. And we had a cross-disciplinary team that worked on this. So all of my co-authors at the beginning were all from different departments at the University of Louisville. We had a woman from anthropology, somebody from sociology, communication, and Pan-African studies. We chose to focus on two locales in Kentucky where the African-American population is the greatest, in Louisville, and in particular the west end of Louisville, and in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. We wanted to make sure that we included a part of Kentucky that wasn't an urban setting, because we do have African-American populations that live in more rural and small towns across Kentucky. And here you can see where Louisville is in comparison with Hopkinsville. So Hopkinsville is located kind of down in the south central part of the state, closer to the Tennessee border. Louisville is the largest metropolitan area in Kentucky. It's about 1 million people, and the population is approximately 33% African American. And Hopkinsville is located in a county called Christian County. It's a small rural city. It's 30,000 people. And the African-American population there is 31% of the total population. So you can see that these kind of have similar general sort of proportions of African-Americans living in the population center as a whole. The entire study was large. I'm not going to talk about all of it today. We had two rounds of qualitative data collection and then two rounds of quantitative data collection. And I'm going to talk about the final round of quantitative data collection, which looked at a market trade-off survey. We had about 300 people, and the survey took about 30 minutes with a $20 incentive. We also were out collecting data at festivals and barbershops and community meeting locations. So we were really getting out into the field and trying to find people where they went during their everyday lives. Our sample was composed of African Americans who basically said, that's how I view myself. So we asked them, you know, what they self-identified as, and everybody had to be over 18 years old. They also had to rank as overweight or obese on the NIH BMI chart. Our average age was about 45. We had more women than men, which typically happens, although we had a pretty low average household income, about $30,000 a year. So because of that, you can see that approximately a third of our sample received some sort of food assistance, which I think it will sort of translate when you see some of the results here in a second. And you can sort of see how the numbers broke down across the two different locations. So let me talk about the methodology just a second. This marketing trade-off survey is something that uses an adaptive conjoint analysis. And the way that's often used by marketers is to identify the sort of optimal product combinations in a competitive marketplace. So the first step in a conjoint analysis usually is to kind of describe the product or service you're interested in selling in terms of its attributes. So let's take, a laptop computer. You might be deciding about how much storage capacity you want in your computer, the processing speed, the screen size, the price, the brand. Those kinds of attributes are all coming into play in your decision. And then within each attribute, you have additional decisions to make, right? In terms of storage capacity, do I want 500 gigabytes or do I want 1 terabyte of storage capacity? And in terms of brand, do I want to be buying, you know, a Dell or HP, or do I want an Apple computer? So what happens is respondents are shown sort of a set of product profiles that are a unique combination of each of these levels or each of these elements of the attributes, and they're sort of forced to choose one or the other. And so from this choice data, you can sort of estimate the overall utility of certain attributes and attribute levels of the products. You can kind of come up with the ultimate product combination. We have tried to apply this concept to message design for help. And what that means is that instead of product attributes, we were comparing communication message features. And we pretty much use the same features across both geographies because in our qualitative in previous round of quantitative research, we didn't find a whole lot of differences in message elements when we asked about those things before. So we had five core concepts that we sort of presented in this trade-off decision fashion. We looked at behavior, action demonstrated in the message source, the benefit being communicated about doing the behavior, and then sort of like the slice of life or the situation illustrated. And within each one of those, we had either four or five different levels. Here's kind of what the computer screen, this was administered on the computer, and what the computer screen looked like for the participants. So they would get a set of combinations of profiles of attributes here and have to make a decision between the one on the left versus the one on the right. And so by kind of forcing the decision process to occur, you can then sort of get a sense, after you do this multiple times in the survey, which things are driving the decision process. So is it the benefit that's, you know, a little bit more motivational than action demonstrated? And then which of the benefits seems to be driving overall decision? So in terms of just the attributes themselves and looking at the attributes as a whole, we found that message source was the most important part of the message. And then the action being demonstrated was sort of the least important part, and everything else sort of fell in between. And Louisville and Hopkinsville were separated out there, but they kind of followed the same pattern. When we look more closely at the different levels of each of the attributes that we had identified, and here you can see that there are five different options that we identified for message source. Some of these are things that we typically do in public health, like we might think that your doctor might recommend that you eat more fruits and vegetables, or in, especially in African American populations, we've had a lot of faith-based interventions. Others were things that we heard earlier in our study, so people had mentioned their moms and grandmoms, and they had also talked about their healthy close friends. So what you can sort of get from the numbers here, and these are all relative, but you can see which of the options people sort of picked or preferred the most. And across both locations, people preferred to hear from somebody who looked like their healthiest close friend. This surprised us because we had been hearing people talk about their moms a lot. So we really thought that their moms were going to be, you know, be preferred. And actually, I want to point out a couple things here. And you know, it's not that moms and grandmas weren't liked, but they just weren't liked quite as much as the healthiest close friend when people were hearing a message about fruits and vegetables. In Louisville, in the urban population, people seemed to like their moms and grandma maybe just a little bit better than in the rural population, which again sort of surprised us. And we wondered if that was because, you know, in the urban population, maybe people felt like they didn't get as much contact with their moms and grandma to begin with. I'm not sure. We didn't really explore that. But I also want to point out that down here at the bottom is somebody who looks like your church leader. And it's at the bottom because in Louisville it was sort of the lowest score. In Hopkinsville, it didn't do that poorly. It wasn't at the top of the list, but it still had a fairly positive resonance with Hopkinsville residents there. So in the urban setting, the church leader really wasn't somebody who, you know, was seen as a positive message source among the people that we talked with. But in Hopkinsville, the more rural setting, that didn't seem to be such a bad idea. So it may have some implications for some of our decisions about where and when to use faith-based interventions. Looking at the situation illustrated, again, both of our geographies, they both liked the same concept here, that the person in the message is talking about setting a good example for other people. The one thing that we sort of notice when you look across all of the options is that in Hopkinsville, other options that talked about family also did fairly well, whereas in Louisville, in the more urban setting, we get an option that's a little bit more individually focused that sort of floats to the second position there. Okay, when we looked at behavior, we saw that eating two cups of fruit and 2.5 cups of vegetables every day was most important for people. And what we also noticed is that sort of the verbal version of filling your plate with half of your plates with fruits and vegetables, which is the USDA current suggestion, wasn't really all that well liked. I don't know if it was because we had it in textual format and not in a visual format that made the difference, but it wasn't something that seemed to float to the top. And then finally, for benefits, lowering your risk for heart disease and heart attack, the health benefits seemed to be a good idea across both places. But also the sort of personal vanity benefit of just looking better overall seemed to do well in both places, and in particular in Hopkinsville. It's very close to the top score in Hopkinsville. The action demonstrated is our last attribute, and this group of people had fairly low income. We had a good portion of people on food assistance, so the idea of wanting to understand more ways to buy more fruits and vegetables for less didn't really surprise us as the top scorer. But if you look across the differences between Louisville and Hopkinsville, you see that there are a slight difference in the sort of the second scorer there. So the best message overall for both places seems to be somebody who looks like your healthiest close friend, who suggests that you eat 2 cups of fruit and 2.5 cups of vegetables every day, and provides tips for how to buy more fruits and vegetables for less, with the promise of lowering your risk of heart disease and heart attack. And that this message should be provided in a medium where audio text or visuals can illustrate the message source, setting a good example for other people like family and friends. We had a couple interesting takeaways in that losing weight and teaching one's family healthy eating habits didn't seem to be viewed as being as motivational as some of the other benefit options tested. lowering one's risk of heart disease and heart attack seemed motivational. Looking good seemed motivational. And setting a good example for others were all important. But we kind of found it interesting that people found, setting a good example was motivational, but teaching your family about healthy eating habits didn't really, didn't seem as motivational. And we're not quite sure why that happened. We think maybe that setting a good example perhaps makes you feel good about yourself, or maybe the idea of teaching somebody something requires a particular set of skills that maybe they thought they didn't have or seemed a little bit harder to actually do. Okay, and then I have one more takeaway, and then I can wrap it up. We also found that the difference between looking good and being motivational but not wanting to lose weight was kind of interesting, and we think that perhaps this is perhaps culturally motivating because we've got some past research that, of course, shows body images are a little bit different in African-American populations than perhaps with their white counterparts. So it might have been interesting to have a fifth round of research that delved into this a little more deeply.